Stand like Stone Cold with a few beers. Play the game, I end the game. I'm champion, I'm Triple H. Undertaker, I'm the maker. Bury the brother like Kane. Ooh, 1-3, hit the tombstone, hit the chokeslam on face. Yeah. Ooh, yeah, like a macho heel, till I cut to muscle. If you suck a lot of tomatoes, I'ma keep a couple muddles. Ooh, and you may call me HBK. When I'm tuning up the fame, you best be getting in my way. Ooh, yeah, I'm degenerate, I love it, yes, I love it. If you wait, done with that, then I got two words for you, suck it. Too sweet, put your fangs up. Too sweet, pour another cup. This be busy, 23, got me.
Welcome, everyone. It's been a long time since we've seen you, I know. This is part two of my interview with Chris Fresh. Where we left off, we were talking about around like schools around the country and how good some of these promotions are. And that's where we were. I think we're about to jump into EPW. So take it away, I guess, me and Chris.
Then I think I raved about them last time. You know, I look at EPW and their cavalcade of talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, PWA get its credit rightfully so because their roster is pretty damn good. Yeah. You know, they can put on a show without much thought and it's going to be amazing. But I always say people sleep on Perth because it's in Perth. The best wrestler perhaps in this country is Marcus Pitt.
Yep.
And
like Mikey Nichols is not very far behind him either.
No. But, you know, Muff Daddy is a great promo, amazing look, and can wrestle. And not afraid to have fun either. You know, like I had him carrying buckets of piss in MCW because he said he was going to piss in the ring, and it just became his thing that he was constantly talking about piss. And the good thing about him is he just rolled with it, you know. And he can do it, but I like, it's hard to say because it always changes and I don't see everything. But, you know, if you said to me, everybody's locally available, who are you booking? Like, Marcus Pitt's an absolute given.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, and then you've got Damian Slater, you know, Taylor King's gotten himself in incredible shape.
Yeah, Julian Ward now.
You got Julian Ward. Like, you've got Kaz now over there with a completely new gimmick, really found himself, you know. It's Gavin McGavin, incredible wrestler. Edith
Love
Knight,
Gavin McGavin.
Yeah.
Love Gavin.
And he's so different. Like the one show I got to do with him, he was in this tag team and he's wearing that amateur wrestling helmet stuff.
Yep.
And he's so different from that now. And you just look at their roster and it's like, they don't even have to do anything. That's just their native roster.
Yeah.
Like, this is the pool that we're choosing from. And on top of all of that, Davis Storm.
Yeah. It's also like you look at it and the guys that are the top of the card there, your Pitts, your Mikey Nichols, Gavin McGavin, Davis Storm, Slater, they all train those guys. You know what I mean? So everybody in that company knows that these guys are putting in just as much and just as hard as they are, if not sometimes more hard as they are to be as good as they're possible. So it raises the level of everyone in that company. It's the same with PWA. Like all those guys that are in the top part of that card are all either trainers or train regularly in their schools. So all the rookies and the younger guys see them around. So they know they're working and they know, I've got to be this good to be able to get there.
And the thing is now in Melbourne, you know, you've got the MCW Academy, you've got PCW, you've got Vicious Pursuit, and now you've got Josh and Phil with Relentless. Sorry, JXT, I should put over his working name because people might not know who I'm talking about. And, you know, like Relentless sort of gets slept on a little bit because it's in the far western suburbs of Melbourne. But they've produced Big Dude Energy.
Yep.
Who have, like, what tag team turns around that quick and makes that much of an impact? Like, you know, because Relentless hasn't been open that long. And these
they put on a good little training show as well. That Mayhem show that they put on.
Yeah.
It was like, you can see that the guys are really green, but you can see how much growth they've got in them when you watch that show. Well, at least I could see when I watched it, that those guys are going to be pretty good because they've just got that thing. They just need time, if that makes sense.
And then, like, you know, you go to the two promotions in Adelaide and incredible talent on both sides. you know, you've got Delta, you've got Tommy Knight, you know, you've got Rad Daddy, you've got the Armstrongs, you've got the Bassos, you've got Big Brody Marshall's making comeback. Does any dude look any more manly or sound any more manly than him?
He's the manliest man ever. I've known him since before, like we got into wrestling together because we were friends before that. And like, it was like he thought, I'm going to grow a beard. Then the next day you rocked up and he had like the Ned Kelly of beards going on. And he's like, what the hell is with you?
How did you grow that? Like, because I heard him talk on Dave's Video Graveyard. There you go, Davey. I did a plug for you. And I just thought, that's the manliest voice I think I've ever heard in my entire life.
Russell Crowe goes,
I wish I could talk like that.
I've got an outtake from a promo back in the old RCW days where he was cutting a promo and halfway through the guy broke and he goes, you're just so bloody Australian. I can't do this.
he is a manly sounding man. But then, you know, you've got Matt Hayter. Matt, please take it easy with your kicks on some of my friends down here in Melbourne. But he's really, you know, he made a big impact when he worked for DMDU down here. Of like, my phone was lighting up, going, "You've got to check out Matt Hayter. You've got to check out Matt Hayter." It's like, all right. Like, when I get like that, I'm like, I'm not checking out Matt Hayter. Like, everybody loves him all of a sudden.
He's a kid I've been on for a long time because I knew. Yeah. You know how you can just tell the guys, one's got natural charisma and then they can actually wrestle as well. It's like, well, that's kind of hard to find. It's usually you get one and then they learn the other part. And it's sort of like him, he was straight away. And he, at the time, he was working for primarily, it was Snake Pit or PWSA.
Okay.
And I said to him.
I'm still going PWSA.
Yeah.
It's not Robin, is it?
Raddick?
No. There was a woman called Robin that used to own it back in the day.
I just said to him, I said, like, contact the boys from RCW. You need to, like, spread your wings. Just working in that one fed, you're just going to always be this. And you need to be more than this. You deserve to be more than this. You're too good to just, like, work for that one company. It's not a shot on that company at all. You just need to spread your wings because you get better. The more people that you rub elbows with, the more like iron sharpens iron.
It's what we were talking about earlier of getting out of that cycle of I'm only going to be here and getting out there.
Yeah, and he eventually took the advice after God knows how long to keep pushing him. And just his growth over those next 2 years to the point where like it was one day when I just happened to be in Adelaide. It was the last time I was in Adelaide, so it would have been about 2 or 3 years ago. And Cree came up to me and one of his good mates, Zach, and was just like, do you think he's ready? It's like, he's more than ready. Just give him a shot and he'll be fine. And within like a year, he was their champion because he'd proved himself. He just took off.
He was certainly the belle of the DMDU ball, apparently. Like everybody was raving about him. And then like, if you look at the female side of things in Australia, there's quite a bit of talent. And, you know, and I always think people sleep too much on Shazza McKenzie. And even though she's got a strong social presence, I'm amazed she's not everywhere because she could help elevate so many of the younger talent that are coming through. And that's it. What Sydney have so many best kept secrets that they have that constantly work with everybody and everybody's getting better because they're constantly working with them. But, you know, like Tali's back, you know, Aisha is really starting to make a name for herself. And I'm like, that kid's talented. Give her a couple of years and Aisha's got she's got a bit of the indies about her, the indie Hartwells.
We reviewed the last PWA show. And I was just like, I had to step out of the Jessica Troy match because I said, she's my favorite wrestler in the country at the moment. So whatever I say is not going to be in any way. You need to just, you can review this match because anything she does, I love. So she's my favorite Australian wrestler at the moment.
But doesn't she just make it look effortless? Like she's so good at what she does.
Yeah, her character... She never breaks from that. Like so many times you see people, and I'm sure, I don't know if other people see it, but I'm sure you probably do, that you see them break character when they start wrestling. Like, she never does that. She's always in that mindset for the whole time.
That zone.
And that I love. I love that.
Yeah, and you don't... Sometimes you see people think. Yes. And it's like, don't think, feel. As Bruce Lee would say. But, yeah, and, you know, then you go to Adelaide and, you know, you've got... They've got quite a few women. You know, you've got Delta, you've got Savannah Summers. You know, you've got Lily Blaze. Like, there's quite a few talented women there. You know, there's Lena Cross in Perth, who's like, she's on an island by herself.
Lena Cross. You look at like Rita Stone in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Holy hell, she is going to be really good.
Yeah. It's just a problem at the moment that it's so risky to bring people in on shows. Like, we've taken, like, Tali and Savannah Summers are doing Wrestle Rock, scheduled to do Wrestle Rock. And, but it is, you know, you're taking a risk in bringing people down, just in flights being cancelled.
Yeah.
Like, borders being like, shut, all of that sort of stuff.
Like, spoiler for our show at Wide Bay, we were going to have Gavin and Edith up for it.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was just
great call.
Yeah. We just like, can't do it because Western Australia is what Western Australia is. I wouldn't ask someone to fly over, then have to quarantine themselves for 14 days if I'm not going to pay them the equivalent amount for them to quarantine themselves for 14 days. So
wrestling doesn't work that way.
And
you know, it's unfortunate. Things will eventually get better. It's not going to last forever, like, and that's what I hope. We don't lose too many talented people because they just lose the passion. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that would be a real shame. I would understand it, but it would be a real shame. Sort of what I would sort of say is, find what can get you by with wrestling. Todd will probably disagree with me vehemently, but you know, I found AEW and watching it with my son and he enjoying it. And sort of what I appreciate with AEW is, it's funny, I was a diehard WWF fan growing up, and throughout the wars I was team WWF. It was like, I watched WCW, but it was like, compared to WWF, WCW doesn't know what they're doing, production's not as good, blah blah blah. If you say to me now, do you want to go back and watch something old from WWF or old from WCW, I'm going to choose WCW. And the reason I prefer to go back and watch that is there's no formula. It's all so different. Mm. Yes, there's plenty of good WWF stuff. I'm not saying it's not good. But you can honestly watch Raw from 1998-99 and watch Raw today. Oh, and there's a slight similar feel. And in production and setup. I'm not saying in style and everything, but it feels like it's related to the show from 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And what I like about AEW is not all of it's good, but it's all very different.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be fed different bodies, different production, different angles, and it's not all going to hit, but it's not all going to blur.
Yeah. The thing is, right, I don't hate AEW. Everyone seems to think Todd's smirking. AEW.
They can't see it. I'm just saying.
He's it's going to be on YouTube, so you can watch it. I okay. do not hate AEW. Far from it. I really like AEW. A lot of those workers I really, really like. I just want it to be better. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's just certain things I see where I just go, well, that makes no sense. But because people are so vehemently against WWE, they're letting this slide.
Mm.
It's like, well, no, that might be wrong and that might be bad, but at least it's not Vince. And I'm like,
oh, look, Vince is horrific. You know, Mikey's horrified every time I say this sort of stuff. He's like, I'm trying to form relationships, dude. And it's like, yeah, I'm not. At Wrestle Rock once, I dropped Canyon Seaman's name and Mikey stormed over and said, stop it right now. And edited that off the show. I live to cause trouble. Look, Canyon did nothing but help us, so I've got nothing bad to say about him. But yeah, I don't begrudge anybody that follows WWE. They're untouchable on the level that they're at.
Yeah.
I'm just one of those people that watches, that as a human watches Dark Side of the Ring and just finds it harder and harder to hold my nose. And all wrestling is gross. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's a WWF problem, but it's when I see people bowing to Vince as he comes out and stuff, I'm like, I get you like wrestling, like, but I don't know that you should be bowing to the dude. You know, like it's pretty gross.
I prefer AEW to WWE at the moment. Like watching the shows, I prefer it. It's the way I describe it is like, look, I literally pay to watch Dynamite and Rampage because that's what you have to do. You've got to buy that subscription for Fight. Yep. I'll also fork out another $30 every time they do their quarterly, their pay-per-views. I don't download, I don't like rip them. I pay for them. So I support the Fed. So in that frame, I should be allowed to say what I don't like about that.
Do
you know what I mean? And it seems to me that the fans of the diehard fans of AEW seem to take greater offense than when you criticize something from WWE.
No, Todd, I'll help you here, right? I'll help you find peace.
Okay, please do.
Okay, I'll help you find peace. Do you ever sit back and watch American politics and you see the right and the left and they're doing this? And they're going, yeah, I'm only saying this because the other one's so loud about what they're saying. And then the other one's going, well, I'm saying this loudly because they're so loud about what they're saying. And it's this, it's no different, like about wrestling, about bands, about politics, about sports, about everything. I feel there's plenty of AEW fans that represent the fandom horribly? Absolutely. Are there plenty of WWE fans that represent the fandom horribly?
Absolutely.
Yep. There's probably more WWE fans representing the fandom horribly because there's more WWE fans. And that's, you know, it's just the way it is. You know, I wish there were more AEW fans because I'd like different types of wrestling to sort of like if Impact took off, I'd be happy for Impact. You know, I've just given up. You know,
what I see, right, is if I make what I feel is a valid criticism of WWE and this is just on social media, I'll get likes, I'll get comments, I'll get that. If I do the same on AEW, I will get criticism for it. And it doesn't matter what it is, it doesn't matter what the, like, because I think when Matt Hardy had that fall and got concussed, I came out and said that was, I feel that was completely out of line for AEW to keep that match going. That is dangerous and that should not happen. And I see it a lot happening in those shows. Like I see guys get knocked loopy and they just keep the match going. Where if that happened in WWE, and that's not like, I know Owen Hart fell from a ceiling. I'm very well aware of that. But nowadays, if I see someone get knocked loopy in WWE, they just call the match.
So, I know. I feel WWE have made everything very safe. You know, as safe as you can humanly make it.
Almost too safe.
That's what I was about to say to you. Like, almost too safe. But I'm not the one putting my body on the line. But the question I would ask you then, Todd, is on our level, why do we get passes that you won't give AEW?
What do you mean?
Don't you think everything about local wrestling is just as reckless, if not more?
If I see someone like this is just on my shows, if I see someone knock loopy, I want the referee to call the match straight up.
Yeah.
If they want to go out and do something like,
well, the Matt Hardy thing was particularly bad. You know, like there's like it's undeniable. I'm not debating the merits.
No. There was that one, and there was also I think it was like Jack Evans was knocked unconscious and they literally dragged his unconscious body to the corner and tagged it. I'm like, oh, just stop the match. Like, no one's going to think less of you for doing that when the guy obviously looks like he died just then.
Yeah, I guess it's that indie sensibility, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, of it, or it's the wrestling sensibility, because I think if it happened to Japan, similar things would happen. You know, I'm not sure how many matches would get stopped you know, like I think what you're, to your point, if something is noticeably, if somebody's noticeably out, you have to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, human
and
safety.
That was my main concern for Matt Hardy. He was out. There was plans having him keep going with that. I thought was.
Oof. I think Matt Hardy's wife wasn't thrilled.
No, she no, not at all
about that. But you know, but I don't think you hang AEW on that. What you go is it's a teachable moment to for a young promotion to go. You guys need to get better.
Yeah, and that's basically what I said at the time. I said like you can't go risking people like that. Like CTE is so very well like researched at the moment. So we need to be wary about these things for guys. Like if guys get knocked loopy, stop the match. Don't have them possibly further injure themselves. And that's everywhere. That's WWE, AEW, TNA, our local feds. If guys are knocked loopy, just stop the match. If anything, it somewhat helps wrestling because it's got that air of legitimacy to it. Like people get knocked stupid.
I think wrestling, just by its art form, has to have an element of danger and risk to it, you know. I'm not saying I want people hurt, but you know, I think what makes the art good is making it look as real as possible without getting you know, I'm a Bret Hart fan.
Same.
And but with that, you know, sometimes you're probably going to be a little bit snug and things are going to hit sometimes.
And I noticed that a lot more with, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I just think they need to turn it down slightly, like with AEW. Like
I didn't like the flaming table as an example.
No,
I have to be careful, Todd, of how I come across with this because your words can be misconstrued, and sometimes not. It's sort of like deathmatch wrestling, right? Deathmatch wrestling is not for me. Same. As a professional wrestling fan, it is not for me. Do I feel it's a part of professional wrestling? Yes. Do I feel there is a fan base for that style of professional wrestling? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so if people can somehow safely perform death matches and give the audience what they want, good for them.
Mm.
It's not for me, but I don't get to have an opinion because I'm not paying to see it.
That's right.
I can't, you know, I don't see it. You know, I just as a booker, my preference is I'm not going to book it.
No.
You know,
and if I'm going to book it, I'm going to book it because it was the ending of a monster storyline between people.
Yeah. Have I booked things that have made me uncomfortable? Yes. You know, I'll be honest. Yes, I have. Did I trust the performers? Yes. You know, touch wood, did it all work out? Absolutely. You know, but like with the flaming tables, I just felt it was something in wrestling that wrestling doesn't need.
Mm. Also, know? Like and, on a Wednesday night, like that's a pay-per-view thing for me.
Yeah, yeah, I know, but you're thinking in a very old mindset.
Yeah.
With that, it is unfortunately, I say this as an old fart, but used to love his build up to quarterly pay per views. Unfortunately, it's all about TV now. And credit to AEW in when they do put on a pay per view, they load them with great matches.
Mm.
You know, I rarely invest my $30 into their pay per view going, I'm not going to see a pretty damn good wrestling show.
Yeah.
You know, but it is hard when you're doing weekly television to keep it up. I don't think I could book weekly television.
No. When AEW started, my main thing was it's hard to do that 365 days a year, like 52 times a year. You
know, like when they did the explosions, and maybe thankfully it didn't go off the way it was meant to go off. But, you know, but there is a large section of the wrestling community, and we saw that with the buy rate, I think, that want to see that.
Yeah.
You know, when I was like 16 years old in 1995 and I started dealing with tape traders and I got handed a tape called IWA King of a Death Match, I was fascinated. You know,
yeah, I've still
Terry
got the video.
Gordy, had Terry Funk, you know, had Cactus. You know, I was fascinated by it. But And it was like ECW when I first saw it, you know, some of the violence in that. I was fascinated. But I remember even back then, I'd go, yeah, yeah, the violence, but the wrestling's really good and the storylines are better than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's what I can distinctively remember having those conversations.
That's
because
you talk about, like, sorry to cut you off because sprung a question that I was going to ask before. You talk about, like, it's hard to do that booking where you're booking like week to week to week. With Renegades, you'll be booking like state to state to state, won't you? It's a touring promotion. So
once things chill, like,
yeah, you know, yeah, once things chill. How yeah. Because of your booking style is very much like arcing. How do you feel you're going to be able to do that and translate it to the different states so they know what's going on?
Yeah, I have to adjust how I book. And an element of it, which is going to be hard, and I know it's going to be hard, is creating a product that perhaps people are more willing to check out on VOD than what they have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could have anybody on your side in that, having Mikey J part of your company is a pretty good one. But I also, like, just say hypothetically, we ran our first few shows in Melbourne and then go, we're going to test the waters interstate, mm-hmm. you know, Adelaide, Sydney, Queensland, whatever. And I would perhaps in those areas run shows that are easily palatable to an audience that hasn't seen the product,
mm-hmm.
where if I'm hooking you monthly in Melbourne, I'd play it a little bit different.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know, Todd, I had so much of I didn't even realize how good I had it of having these smaller Essendon shows that were somewhat low risk, building to a big Thornbury show every 4 months,
mm-hmm.
or 3 months. Like, that was the model we grew up on as fans of, you know, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, King of the Ring, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. You know, King of the Ring got added in 93. Before that, it was the Big Four.
Mm.
So
I still call it the Big Four.
Yeah. So I was able to sort of tell smaller stories on Essendon to build the Thornbury. And in that, people got over because they were watching and paying attention and sort of starting to catch on and following. And I felt when MCW moved to Thornbury full time, and I said this as we were making the move as a defeated storyteller, of I won't be able to do what I always did because we can't afford a small one.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tinker with something and dick around with a show and take some risks on Unproven at Thornbury because we need 400 to 500 people in there.
Yeah.
At Essendon, where it was like, hey, Mikey, can you handle this 220 I'm about to deliver you? You know, it's like, okay. But I'm telling you, it's going to build to a big Thornbury. You'll make your money back then. Yeah. Like, we'd have these discussions where once you were at Thornbury full time, it was like, you better be good. You know, and you'd hear about it if not. And with Renegades, I will not be afforded the opportunity to blow it.
Mm-hmm.
So I better get it right. but I also have faith in every single person we've reached out to that they can deliver. And also the people that we haven't reached out to, it's weird. I don't want it to make it seem like offense is in, we don't want to work with you, we don't want to use you. It's sort of like, initially, here's where we're going to roll with. But we're constantly going to be watching and looking and adding, subtracting as we go, whatever best suits the show.
Yeah.
Whatever best suits the fans. You know, there are going to be some things that I have the idea and it doesn't work. And it's like, all right, move on. There are some things that are going to work, but I didn't expect to work. And it's like, okay, here it's going to go. But what I am hoping is, like with anything, like, just the scene in general starts back up and becomes hot again.
Yeah.
Because I'm not saying it's dead. I'm just saying it's been hard to run. and
how to get momentum.
Yeah, and I just want to see everything thriving, because I was never threatened at MCW by anyone. You know, I always said, as long as we're the best in town, that's our job. I don't care what anybody else is doing. And I don't care what anybody else is doing now. I'm not coming to compete because I can't win. Like, if I come in with the mindset of I'm going to step into Sydney and I'll show that PWA a thing or two, am I insane? Like, no, but I'd rather go to Sydney and go, we're cool with PWA, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to say work with them because that would be presumptuous, but certainly not actively compete with them, because that doesn't benefit anyone.
No.
And it's the same with South Australia. It's the same with Melbourne. You know, I know it's more salacious to go, Fresh is going to, you know, do this and do that, but it's just not the case. Fresh is going to be shitting himself, hoping that it's the best possible show that he can deliver on. I'm an old man now. Like, the days of me going, I'm going to destroy everything in my path, has gone. And maybe I've lost some of my edge, and it's a bad thing, but I think it's a good thing, because I'm not as reckless, I'm not as angry, and it only causes angst and pain. You know, like in Melbourne, if Adrenaline, if PCW, if Deathmatch Down Under, if Melbourne City Wrestling and Renegades of Wrestling can all run successful shows, why are you complaining?
Yeah.
What are you worried about?
Yeah.
And I don't care what anybody else is doing. That's their business. You know, I don't get caught up in, like, sure, we all get caught up in the gossip, you know, but, you know, I'm not going to worry and let that affect what I do.
No.
You know, because they're all catering to their own audiences. They've all got their own problems. Good for them. We've got to build an audience. And I don't just assume that that's a given because we've got Destroy All Lines behind us, or because we used to work with MCW, or one of us used to own MCW in Mikey's case. You know, it's not a given. People don't know who we are. They don't know the name. They won't have been to the venue before. It's all new. So we have to, A, convince them to come, B, give them a good show, and C, convince them to come back. And I'm regretting my decision, Todd. I'd like to announce I'm stepping down from Renegades of Wrestling. No, like, I'm excited. Like, I'll be honest, I'm excited. Like, it's exciting. I just wish that there wasn't this nag of the pandemic. And like you were saying, we enter in 2022 and it's behind us and we go, oh, that was shit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's not. The reality of the situation is we're going to be working within it. But
my mantra has just been, it is what it is. That's really what you got to say now.
What I will say to people, the announcement's coming sooner than you'd think, of our first show. And I'm not doing that to tease. It will be announced when it's ready to be announced. But it's coming soon. We're excited and really looking forward to doing something new.
I'm excited for it because I've always loved your work. So seeing it in a different format and this almost like a fresh start is going to be good to see. It's going to be good to see what you can do.
Here's a bit of sizzle for everybody. Of Lockie and I have been messaging each other back and forth quite a bit, and I will say some of the ideas that are kicking about are absurd, and I'm wildly entertained to see where this goes. And this is coming from the two idiots that brought you Uncle Paul and Lockie's quest now that he was signed. It's nothing like that. It's completely different. But
it's Uncle Nick now.
Yeah.
Uncle Tony.
Exactly. It's Uncle Tony. But that's where it's been good sort of to have that creative outlet where me and him can talk, where I've got that relationship with him, where I know stuff we're coming up with, he's not going to take somewhere else and do it. And it's like, all right, we're going to be doing this here. What do you think? What about this idea? Like, he'll leave me voice messages on Messenger, and I'll wake up and, you know, hey, Freth, I've had this idea and I've been thinking that, you know, we do this. I know it sounds crazy. And, you know, I'll give it a big grin and then deliberately not reply for a day. So he thinks I hated it.
Good. Very good.
And then get back and go, no, I loved it. But yeah, like, I hope for you, Todd, that things in Queensland sort of get back up on their feet. And, you know, that scene sort of feels like it's never fully taken off.
Right. So I hope it can. At the moment, there is such a good crop of young guys just ready to go. And it's like, it's frustrating because I can't let them go, but I know that they're ready and they're training. And every time I see them, they're better. Like there's a group of three, Mitch Ryder, Sebastian Matters, and Tim Hayden that just spent the last 4 months over in Farley Dojo. So they've come back and they're raring to go.
I've heard very good things about Sebastian Matters.
Yeah, when the pandemic was on and Mark Davis was stuck in Australia, he was there training all these guys at three count.
Wow.
So a lot of these guys are so far ahead of where they were before the pandemic hit to now. You watch them in the ring, you're like, wow, they're really coming along. And I'm so excited that when it opens up again and we can actually do stuff on a regular basis, they're going to see, like, the public are going to see what these guys can do.
Yeah. And not just the public, like the country.
Mm.
Like, I think it would be good for Queensland to finally, and it's had performers stand out. I'm not saying that hasn't been the case, but I couldn't name a Queensland promotion apart from PWAQ, you know, that sort of, like, really stands out on its own as one of the big promotions of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's crazy considering maybe the size of Queensland works against it a little bit, but Perth's taken off.
But
you know, just to see something really develop and take off there. And, you know, I know Mikey's very gung-ho on making Queensland work. He's
with the Pro Wrestling League boys.
So he feels there's something there, and you feel there's something there. So to me, that's two people's opinions I'd trust, and I'd say it's definitely a good sign.
Like shout out to Bobby and Lucille who helped run Three Count for doing that, because the place just sort of went and there was nowhere. Unless you joined like UPW, the IPW, there was nowhere for those guys to train anymore. So Bobby is just like, well, Bobby and Lucy just, well, no one else is doing it. We're going to do it. Yeah. And they were smart enough to go, what's Mark Davis doing? Mark, can you come in and help these guys? And Mark, of course, helped them. And just streets ahead of where they were before. It's so good to see. Like, I literally get like goosebumps when I talk about them because I'm so excited. Because I get the training videos of what they've been doing. And like there's a guy that's come over from Perth, and his name right at the moment escapes me, and it's going to Solomon Blackwell. He's going to be a kid that, like, in the future people will talk about, because he is, like, when you've got guys like Stormy and like Slater saying this kid is going to be really good, then you know you've already got, like, they're giving you a gift of a worker. And that's like guys like him, there's so many people at the moment I can name off the top of my head that I know are going to be really good if they get the chance to show people. And a lot of the times I just want a promotion in Melbourne and Sydney to go, oh, I'm going to take a chance on this kid on the show. Cause I know when they're there, they're going to
I believe there's somebody that's sort of working with a Queensland promotion that is involved with a pretty big Melbourne promotion. So that may occur.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Yeah. It's that frustration of like, if you could only see these guys.
Yeah. And I think like Queensland and Perth suffers it worse, but you know, that similar thing of, you know, for Adelaide or Melbourne to bring people down from Queensland or across from Perth, it's not cheap.
No.
So you'd want to be special,
yeah.
You know, for a promotion to spend that extra coin. Yeah. It's not.
I've even said to the guys, like, if you want that break, sometimes you've got to pay just to get over there so they can see you. And then once they've seen you, maybe they'll say, yeah, it's worth it to us to bring you back because you were good.
And that happened at MCW, Todd. Absolutely, it happened where people would go, we're in town. That's the code word. We're in town. Is there a spot for me on your next show? And, you know, you'd look at it, and if you felt that the body of work was there, you'd give them an opportunity. Didn't always work out, but sometimes it would be, yep, and we're flying you over for the next show too because, you know, you really made a name for yourself. It's going to be interesting. I think things will flourish once again. I just am just very uncertain still just based on the world climate.
Yeah, it's very for people, I don't know about you, but for someone like me who I like, well, I know you like doing stuff. I like planning out my year show wise. Like in November when I took over the book, I had like February, March, April, May, June booked. Like in my head where we're going, well, not even my head, on paper, where we're going and who's going to be doing this. And this is the arc of the story. And I was like, you know how you get yourself all excited about it?
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, okay, we cut this show out. I can suppose I can shuffle this down. And now it's, but it's sort of like, oh, it's not going to be as good because I had that extra month to marinate.
You have no idea how many changes I've had to make just to something as simple as WrestleRock.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, this show that's happening, some of it was planned a little while ago. A lot of it's different from what was planned just because it's the world that we're living in. I'll just be happy. I'm pretty sure if you gave, you just have to speak to me on a Sunday because I'm going to be pretty dusty on a Saturday. I'm pretty sure getting a show under my belt, you'd speak to a much more optimistic and happy me of like, okay, I kind of feel what this is. And, you know, it feels like we're going to be able to function within it. It may not be exactly the ideal scenario, but it's better than not running, you know?
Yeah.
But back to WrestleRock, like I'm so excited to just, I wouldn't care if they said, sorry, we've only let two people in. I'd go, Jules, let's go. Let's give these two people the best show they've ever had. And I think the talent would be the same of just wanting to go out there and tear the house down.
Yeah. And it's like, because you see how excited they are to just go out there and perform. So you feel like such an asshole when you have to say, look, we have to postpone it. We can't.
And like, I've had to have like a couple of matches for whatever reason, you know, couldn't take place on the show. And rather than replace the match, I chose to scrap it so there's less bodies.
Yeah.
Right. So the show was slightly bigger. And it sucks to have to say to somebody, I'm sorry, we got you next time, sort of thing. I just hope that they know we will. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that it comes from a genuine place. Yeah.
Yeah. It has sucked in that regard. And look, the way everything is, I'll know exactly what's going to happen when I'm there on the day.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't, you know, if somebody needs to isolate or somebody's not feeling well, I'd rather change the whole card than have somebody turn up and put people at risk.
Yeah.
And this is the world that we're in.
Yep. Yeah. You know? 100%.
And I think people just need to be fans. I don't know, you know, how many punters would listen to this or if it's industry, but punters, I think, you know, for all promotions, you need to be forgiving, you know, even WWE and AEW, you know, as big as that, to as small as a WrestleRock.
Yeah. When you look in the last couple of weeks, you've had it like Cody couldn't be at that show.
Then
FTR this week. Yeah.
That wasn't them. I think it was of their opponents.
Yeah. It was Brock or thingy. Mario.
Yeah. Yeah. But just be patient. You know, like, and that's just a little patience. It's what everybody needs because we're all just trying to work this out, you know. And we'll do our best to give you the best show under the current circumstances, but you can't expect everything is going to go 100% as we would hope because the world's not working like that.
Yeah, anymore. The world's not 100% at the moment.
No, like treat wrestling like you do the McDonald's Sunday machine in the middle of the night.
You might rock up, might be working, might not.
you might get the best large chocolate sundae of your life, or you're not getting it because
you might have to just drive past the drive through and wave to the girls and you go through.
Yeah, exactly right.
Quickly before we go, because we've been here forever, it always happens forever, when we talk. What's your favorite geek stuff that you're watching at the moment?
I love Book of Boba Fett. I know it's not loved by everybody.
I'm two eps behind, so
okay, well, I'll
that's tomorrow viewing for me.
Yeah, but you know, I find Temuera Morrison incredibly charismatic.
Mm.
I know some people want a stoic Boba Fett, but for me, I like what he's bringing to the character. Story development of somebody, am I interested in that? No, who'd be shocked? I'd be drawn to that. As much as I didn't want to enjoy a John Cena project, Peacemaker is pretty damn great.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I love it.
Yeah, I love Peacemaker. I was shocked that Robert Patrick's character was scripted with the verbiage he was scripted in that first episode.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't know how people are talking about your cancel culture and you can't say this on TV because, whoa, like they're words you don't hear on TV anymore.
No. But it was like, for the character, it was like, well, this is why he is the way he is. This is how he's grown up.
It set the tone. So yeah, like Peacemaker's like really good. I loved Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Oh, so much. That bit with Egon, I was crying.
Stop it.
I cried.
So I'm in the cinemas and I start crying. And I start going, oh, damn it. Like first it was glassy eyes, then tears. And I'm like, damn it. And I look around and there's plenty of other fat dudes with beards in their 40s. Crying, and I'm like, oh, I feel a bit better about this. And then I started to get it back together, and then on the screen it said for Harold, and I was like, no, I'm gone again. Like,
yeah.
And the tears went. And thankfully, it was like my cinema knew they kept the lights down throughout the whole credits. So I called it the dignity lights. So they kept the lights down so nobody could see me bawling my eyes out.
I just thought credits. It was so smart that they didn't try and make him talk.
No, I thought it was.
That's so smart. I'm like, yes, because you.
Did it freak you out how good the ghost looked?
It was so very good. It was so very good.
Because, like, Star Wars got it wrong. But Tarkin was okay. Princess Leia looked terrible. A lot of people didn't like how Luke looked in The Mandalorian. I thought it was passable.
Yeah, I
thought it was fine. But this Egon ghost was amazing.
Oh,
And
because
and
they'd aged him just right, too.
Yeah, and I thought Phoebe was great. I thought podcast was great. Like to get the kids right is a miracle in itself.
Do you know what I really loved was the soundtrack to it?
Yeah.
Because it was just like he did, this is what my dad would have had. So this is what the music sounds like. It reminded me of that 80s style of movie where the kids were out on an adventure. That's the music that's the music I hear. That's the Goonies music. That's, you know what I mean?
It's very Amblin, like, you know, that stuff. Like, I like a movie when I've already seen it a few times and I sit home and I go, I'm going to pop it on again. You know, because there's a million things I need to watch.
Yeah.
But I chose to watch Afterlife again the other night. What did you think? Did you see The Matrix?
I didn't so much like it, to be honest with you.
No. I didn't hate it. Like, I think because I heard so many people saying it's the worst movie they've ever seen. Mm. Maybe that swayed me the other way of this isn't that horrible. Like, it's very meta of, you know, everything it is. I didn't pay to go see it, you know. I may have.
Nefarious means.
but you know, I thought it was fine. Like, I liked Bugs. She was cool.
I thought
like,
Neil Patrick Harris was really good.
And I love Jonathan Groff and everything that he does ever since he was Jesse St. James in Glee. And he's great as King George in Hamilton, if you haven't seen Hamilton.
Yes, I have. It was good. My wife made me watch that because I'm an idiot and I'm just like, I'm not watching this. No, sit down and watch it. You'll enjoy it. And fair enough. Yep, I enjoyed it. It was really, really good.
Speaking of Neil Patrick Harris, if you get a chance to watch it next Christmas, 8-Bit Christmas.
I heard things, Christmas but I never watched it.
I'm a sucker for Christmas, so that's always going to help. But better than it had any right to be I will describe it.
To annoy my wife, because I know how much she hates the movie, I always put on Christmas Bounty with the Miz. It's a terrible movie. It's a terrible, terrible movie, but I know my wife hates it. So that gives me the joy, of her going, why are we watching this? Because it's Christmas? This is a Christmas movie.
I've got so many Christmas movies in my rotation, I can't afford a clunker in there, you know. It's but yeah, 8-Bit Christmas was surprisingly watchable. And you know, is made for people of our vintage. But yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what other? I haven't seen Dune.
I haven't seen Dune either.
I kept saying I want to see it on the big screen. I've probably left it too late. Spider-Man was incredible.
Oh, yes. So good. I had like a guy at work was like, I really didn't like the ending. So I don't know how you don't like that ending. It's so exactly what a superhero, he did what he had to do for the greater good.
And it now becomes smaller stories again, which is what Spider-Man works best at, is working in those environments. I was skeptical about Spider-Man going in, so I was happy to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
I'm the one who's worried about the Batman.
Really? Do you know what it was? I originally, when I heard Robert Pattinson was cast as Batman, I'm like, oh, he's gonna make a really good Bruce Wayne. I don't know how he'll be as Batman. And now after watching the shorts, I'm like, he's a really good Batman. I don't know if I like him as Bruce Wayne.
See, I'm with you. I'm not sold on his Bruce, but I like his bat.
Yeah.
I like everything about it, but
I like that he didn't try and put on an effective voice as Batman, because that's a mistake I think a lot of guys have made when they play that.
2 hours and 50 minutes.
Is that how long it's supposed to be? Oof.
I don't know if that's true. I got told by somebody yesterday, 2 hours and 50 minutes. And I was like, oh, no.
But that, like, that's supposed to be fair. That's how long I felt the Eternals went for. So
I didn't hate the Eternals. I felt like I was doing my duty as a Marvel fan.
That's what my wife's like, why are we still watching this? I said, because I'm pretty sure this is going to spin off into something else. And if I don't watch this all the way through, I won't know what happens in this other movie.
Yeah. You know, who's the weird squinty-eyed dude that's in that movie?
Is that the one that's supposed to be playing Joker?
Yeah, I was going to say, did you hear the rumors that he's going to be playing the Joker? Yeah, because Julian James gives me all my Batman updates. I don't want spoilers, but he was like, did you hear that there could be the Joker in this movie? And I was like, I don't know that they should do it in this one. Give the Riddler his moment. Give the Penguin his moment.
What do you think of the Flash?
Yeah, I'm petrified that they could ruin Ben Affleck's exit and Michael Keaton's return with a typically bad DC movie. And I'm fascinated that Ezra Miller choked a woman. And they just wrote it out. I'm like, meh, did he?
But he's quick. He's really quick.
And I'm just amazed that considering...
They doubled down on him because he's like playing two parts in this thing.
Yeah, but they had a chance for a reset. And they could have done anybody. They could have announced Gunston and people just would have dealt with it.
Yeah.
And they, maybe they looked into it, I guess. Like, but the fact that they didn't even address it is just really odd. But DC, Warner have a terrible track record with everything that's gone on, you know, with the treatment of Ray Fisher and the Joss Whedon thing and everything. Jeff Johns, you know, it's been a bit of a dumpster fire for them. So I want The Flash to be a good movie because, you know, I love Batfleck and I love Michael Keaton's Batman. You know, I think he's all our generation's Batman. But I don't, what runs on the board do they have to trust?
To
say that this is going to be
like, I must admit, I did like the remake, the Justice League remake.
It was better.
I thought it was a lot better than what I was like. Well, yeah, that makes sense now.
Yeah, But it was like when I watched the extended version of Batman versus Superman and it made more sense.
Mm.
And it was like, but why do you have to watch an extended version for your film to make sense?
Yeah.
Like, because like with the...
It was like back in the day with Daredevil, the Ben Affleck one. I was like, well, that was shit. Mm. They're like, you should watch the director's cut. It's a lot better.
Yeah.
Then, well, you'd think the director's cut would be the cut because he's the director.
apparently not.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like, and then like, you know, killing an unnamed Jimmy Olsen, you know, like all those sorts of things. It's like, how many bad decisions are you gonna push through? Like, and the fact that, like, the Joker killed Dick Grayson. And that's the suit that we see with the spray painting on, you know, the ha 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 jokes. Yeah, on
was that Dick Grayson? Like,
that's Dick Grayson.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I, people wrestling people
just go, what on earth are these nerds talking about? Yeah, I just about? Assumed Jason.
No, no. Yeah, no. It's Dick Grayson. Because I think Zack Snyder did his big, this is what it was going to be interview. And yeah, it was meant to be. And it's like, no, like, what are you doing? Stop that. Like, it's. I like Titans. Have you given
me a watch? Yeah, I was about to say, the funny thing is where Marvel don't really get their TV shows a lot right, DC seem to excel in that. Like every show I've watched that is a DC sort of a hero show, I've really enjoyed. Some of them I've fallen off on, but I've enjoyed...
That's the DC thing is you start watching them, especially the CW shows,
yeah,
and you bail. But Titans is like... First season was bumpy, but I pursued. And now I loved the last season. Like, I couldn't wait till the next episode was coming out. And I'm an unashamed Titans fan. I haven't watched Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I haven't watched that either, but I actually really like Stargirl, surprisingly.
Yeah, I've heard Stargirl's good. But it's a family watch, too.
Yeah.
But I think the Marvel shows on Disney Plus, I think, have been perfectly good.
Yes, they have. I will admit
that. I liked Hawkeye.
Hawkeye, I loved. I love Hawkeye as a character.
I'm the same.
He's just something about him when you can relate to him. He's not a superhero. That's why I think you can relate human, to him.
He's the human in the world of gods.
Yeah.
You know, and he's usually funny and quick-witted and everything like that. So it's good. And that's where I was disappointed with DC blowing the whole Batman thing so badly in. We finally were going to get a cool-looking Batman amongst gods, you know, where there's Aquaman, there's Superman, there's Wonder Woman and everything. He's in a fantasy environment and they blow it and then it's back to a real world Batman. And it's like, I love the Nolan films, but we've got the Nolan films.
Yeah.
No, they only.
I'm interested to see what they do though. I am interested to see what they do. Because
if DC want to win me over in the Flash movie, have Tom Hardy's Bane turn up. Now that I'll be impressed by. Did you watch Venom 2?
Yes, I did.
Awful movie.
Yeah. I like the interplay between the two Venom, like Venom and
Carnage.
Tom Hardy. I think Woody Harrelson.
Eddie and Venom.
Yeah, I think Woody Harrelson just chews the scenery in that movie. Everything he does, he's like, you are legitimately insane. I believe this.
Do you know what he did? He decided to play Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation. That's what he reminded me of.
Well, I was more like, well, he's just the natural born killer's character.
Yeah, yeah.
But now he's got this.
But yeah, the Venom movies aren't for me.
It's not something I watch again, but I didn't mind it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and, no, it makes no sense. And, it's a terrible movie.
And the little teaser in the Spider-Man Far From Home too at the end of that.
Well, that's definitely interesting, but that just indicates a new Venom.
Yeah, yeah. And also, what did you think of the post-credits scene in Ghostbusters? That I just loved.
Yeah. There were a couple.
The one with Bill Murray and Sigourney.
Well, what was weird was because they throw up Sigourney Weaver on the screen and you're like, when was she in the movie?
Yeah, I was like, did she play Zool? No, she didn't play Zool. Yeah, she was...
No, and then bang, it goes to that scene and I thought that scene was perfect.
Yes.
Did you pick it was Olivia Wilde as Zool?
Yes. But my during that cut scene at the end, my wife's like, what is this? And I'm like, this is pretty much the start of Ghostbusters. Yeah, this is what Bill Murray used to do to pretty young in like pretty young students. He goes, she's like, well, that's gross. I said, yeah, well, it was the '80s. It wasn't gross then.
It was a different time. And like, I even liked, you know, Winston's wealthy. He's taken Ecto One back into the firehouse and you see the containment unit light. And it was like, cool. The only slight change I would have made in that movie, and it's the tiniest thing, is when Phoebe's looking at the dates and she's going, it's a countdown. Ghostbusters 2 wasn't in it.
Oh, okay.
In the countdown.
I didn't realize,
it,
yeah.
No, it talks about the first one. And I was just like, it's such an easy thing just to mention that as well.
Yeah.
Because I believe that's canon. that was, but yeah, what a movie Ghostbusters Afterlife is.
Yeah. Just when she rips that dude in half, I was like, she just ripped the dude in half.
Well, at first I was like, that's J.K. Simmons.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. And for podcasters, the great gag of it really finds its voice in episode 46 and then calling back to that gag later was just amazing. You're my listener. You're my subscriber. That's like a great inside baseball for podcasters.
Have you ever watched the show Superstore?
No.
There was one joke in that where like you never heard about this girl having a podcast the whole way through. And they're having this argument. And then all of a sudden, this guy just busts out, nobody wants to hear about your opening. Just get to the interview in your podcast. And I lost it. I'm like, oh, my God. It stopped me doing intros for a good while. I'm like, I'm not doing that anymore.
I insist on torturing the listeners of my podcast. they will just deal. But we just did a show with Steele Saunders, who's very prominent in the comedy world and the Star Wars world. And I proceed to drink 8 strong zeros across a 3-hour period and am trashed on the whole episode. And it's like, who's listening? Like, because like Lockie Hendricks and Jules joined us on our Christmas episode. And there was a point towards the end, he goes, does anybody listen to this? And it's like, you'd be surprised. Like, I don't know why they're listening.
Yeah.
But lots of people are listening, and primarily Americans. It must be the accent.
Yeah. Well, I've got a few. It's funny because like the ones I see in Florida, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I know those people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Florida, like, yes. I know those people, but I don't know the rest of the country, but I reckon I know those guys that are listening to
it. Sorry, Todd, this runtime will scare everybody off.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless they're looking for work.
Yeah, well, there you go. As always, mate, it's a pleasure. I need to have you on more often so we don't talk. Well, we probably would anyway. But for people that want to follow everything you're doing, mate, how can they do that? Are there still tickets available for?
Yeah, Russell limited Rock? Tickets available because we've got reduced capacity due to everything that's going on. But you know, there are a few tickets remaining, so don't be gun shy. Get in there and buy them. You can follow me at Chris Fresh on Twitter and Instagram. There's also at Russell Rock. And Todd, I have not got the socials.
Is it
burnt into my brain.
ROW Wrestling or RO Wrestling?
You've done better than me. Here we go. At RO Wrestling AU.
Ah,
there
it is, the AU.
On all your favorite socials, Renegades of Wrestling, coming to you first quarter 2022. Two for 22. I'm excited about the prospects of what Australian wrestling is going to blossom into out of this. And I just say to everybody, be positive, keep training, keep at it, you know, focus on what you're passionate about, focus on what you're positive about, and we're coming back eventually.
Yeah.
At full force. You know, even if it's just a few shows here and there for everybody, eventually this thing, the world's going to get on top of it, and we're going to be running regular, and we're going to thrive, because I legitimately believe Australia is one of the top independent scenes in the world.
Yeah. For us, if you want to follow us, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, all the usual places you can get that. Socials at Wrestle Radio AU on Twitter and Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and just look up Wrestle Radio Australia on Facebook. Chris Fresh, as always, mate, it is an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Todd.
Until next time, guys. See you later. Beautiful. Too sweet, put your fangs up. Too sweet, pour another cup. Let's be prison.